You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Monster House presents.
Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Subtext, The Projection Booth, and The Daily Meditation Podcast. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com. At Monster Talk, we're always looking into mysteries, but there's one mystery which only you can provide the answer for. Who are you? Airwave Media is doing a network-wide audience survey, and we would love to learn more about you, our listeners, the people who make this show possible with your support and attention. Just go to surveymonkey.com/r/airwave, all one word. So that's surveymonkey.com/r/airwave. But don't worry, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Select Monster Talk from the drop-down list of shows and then fill out the simple questions to tell us more about who you are. We hope to hear from you. That's surveymonkey.com/r/airwave. Thanks.
It's your first look inside the house known as the Portal to Hell, a place where demons supposedly wrought havoc with a helpless family in horrors straight out of The Exorcist. This man just bought the notorious house in Gary, Indiana for the bargain basement price of $35,000.
What compelled you to buy this house?
I have a passion for investigating claims of paranormal.
Zach Bagans is the host of the Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures. We spoke inside the front porch, the precise spot where a terrorized mom claims that horseflies mysteriously swarmed in the dead of winter, as they did in the Amityville Horror.
Do you believe that house is possessed by demons?
I do. I feel that it's something very bad going on in that house.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
In the introduction to this episode, you'd heard an excerpt from Inside Edition. In that clip, they're discussing the Gary, Indiana site commonly called the Demon House. In this episode, we're going to look at the claims around this house and talk about the plausibility of the many weird and mysterious stories associated with the property and its former occupants. We'll also be tackling the Zach Bagans documentary about this topic in a future installment of our YouTube series, Debased on a True Story. Now, this episode runs a little bit longer than normal, so let's just hop right into it.
Monster Talk.
Okay, welcome to Monster Talk. This is exciting. I like it when we do our own research. Even when we're not the guests, we usually do a lot of pre-show research, but this is such an interesting topic. Karen, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, we are talking about the Demon House in Gary, Indiana. It goes by many different names. Also, the Ammons Haunting and the 200 Demons House and the Portal to Hell.
Nice. Portal to Hell.
So not just the Demon House, but yeah, I mean, this, I agree with you about our research. I think we always uncover things that other people haven't found. I think we dig a little bit deeper than most. And I think there's just lots of interesting things at play with this particular story. And we will also be talking about the same topic from a different perspective with the next episode of Debased on a True Story, talking about the Demon House documentary.
That's a word. Yeah.
is that the right term for it? A drama?
Yeah.
Drama?
Mockumentary.
Yeah, that'll be
fun. Speaking of which, Matt's joining us.
Yeah. What was that?
or it could be a demon as well. Since we've opened up this portal.
Can we get that voice to demonstrate itself again? We got Matt Baxter in the house.
In the demon house. Yo. Yes, the Demon House in Gary, Indiana. So this hit the news back in 2012, but then it kind of came back again in 2014 and then 2016.
One thing, I like the way you stated that, Karen, when you said that it goes by many names.
Mm-hmm.
This story, it's been around for quite some time, but it just hasn't quite died. And there are lots of different versions and interpretations of it. It hasn't quite died. Nothing there apparently has quite died. So the story goes that Latoya Ammons and her family, which included three kids, 7, 9, and 11 at the time, also her mother, Rosa Campbell, they moved into a house. And I guess it doesn't matter. I can give the address here. I mean, I'm usually loath to hand out the address of a place.
To docs.
Well, to dox them and so that legend trippers...
You don't want to send legend trippers to a private residence, exactly, yeah.
Well, and I guess that's further to the end of the story too, where you were about to go there. There's not much to see there anymore. So anyway, this is on Carolina Street in Gary, Indiana. And so the story goes back to November 2011 when the family moved into this little, I mean, it looks like a kind of shotgun.
It's a small house. Yeah, it was a rental, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
Yes, so a rental. And so they moved into this place, and within a week, they began to experience very strange activity. So it started with swarms of flies in the kind of porch area, which to me is very reminiscent immediately of Amityville.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think of that.
But, I mean, is that Rod Steiger scene is so, you know, it's iconic. Of him was it the sewing room being surrounded by flies the winter?
Yes, exactly. And this was during the winter as well, because this is going back to November. And so they started to experience other activity as well, namely footsteps and footsteps in the basement. So I think it's just a one level house, but they do have a kind of basement downstairs.
They must have something downstairs because that figures into the story later. So I'm not sure how that worked. By the time we talk next of this, we'll have seen the film and I'm sure we'll know much more about the interior of the house.
Yes, indeed. So with the activity, here are some of the claims. They don't only include these claims, but a lot more than even this, but possession. So this was supposed to be demonic possession. But in particular, one of the kids was walking backwards up the walls. That's the famous story that we keep hearing about.
Yeah, that definitely hit the news. That must have been in the 2014 news cycle, I think.
I think so. And it was supposedly witnessed and documented by a number of authorities, people in authority, police officers, medical staff, child protection services officers. So there were a lot of people who were attesting that they had seen some of this phenomena and that they endorsed that these things had actually happened. So some of the other activity includes levitation, and that makes me think of the Enfield poltergeist.
Yes. Yeah.
So the kids were choking and being thrown across the room. And at one point, I think that the police claimed that they'd seen that happen as well. One of the kids, his eyes were rolling back into his head and the whites of his eyes were visible, and he was growling and he was uttering, "It's time to die. I'm going to kill you." So it's exactly what you want to hear from your seven-year-old.
You know, I heard that from my seven-year-old earlier today.
Yeah.
So that doesn't shock me.
It's like other scary things,
not
like
demonic possession.
Those demonic things, like, "I hate you, Dad. You suck." It's like
I'm bored.
Damn, kids.
Yep. As they do.
I learned it from you.
Blake, you were reading my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the kids were talking to invisible people. When all of these things happened, too, the kids claimed later on that they had no recollection of what had transpired. But there's more as well, shadow figures. I mean, how could you have something like this without having shadow figures? And oil dripping from the blinds of the house, which is, you know, just kind of makes me think of your Catholic icons, which comes into play a little later as well.
Terrifying. The fact that they can't remember any of this really, to me, makes me feel like when I ask our seven-year-old to take his dishes to the sink and he can't remember that I said that 2 minutes later.
When you ask again and again
and he can't remember. So I think that demons really are moving freely through our children.
Maybe it's not so uncommon after all. There was even more activity, flickering lights, and lots of people taking photographs of ghosts and EVPs that were captured in the house. There was one particularly compelling one in which a demon said, "Hey."
So walk up to her and be like, "Hey."
No. Like, "Hey."
"Hey."
No. "Hey."
"Hey."
"You sure you my nephew, man?"
No, it wasn't that cheery, no.
Yeah, it was really, really frightening because it was kind of like, "Hey."
It was an unassuming, demonic, "Hey." So even more activity, objects would fly around the house. So we're starting to get into more of the poltergeist, noisy ghost style activity. Doors slamming, footsteps in the basement, which I've already mentioned, but a lot of things that were taking place in the basement. Weird things were found down there, items from the house. So things were apporting, moving around the house. Underwear was found in the basement too, and a painted fingernail, most strangely of all.
Wow. Like a plastic one or like a real one? Or we don't know, I guess.
It was like a press-on nail.
Like a Lee press-on nail, yeah.
Nail, okay. There you go.
I don't know why I said specifically the brand Lee. When I was growing up, Lee press-on nails ran a lot of commercials around the same time as the kids' cartoons, so.
Hey, that's all there was.
Yeah.
Aquanet and Lee press-on nails. That's all you needed for the 80s.
So Prince Adams keeps his hair all tidy in Eternia. That's
exactly.
There you go. I mean, yes, we have heard of a lot of these kinds of claims before, but this really truly seems to have everything in this particular story. It's very impressive.
And I guess here's part of the problem that I have with it, not even about whether it's real or not. It's just this. There is a really sad and tragic aspect to this because you've got a family undergoing what they feel like is supernatural oppression, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's tough. On the other hand, you've got the man that Joel McHale would call Scooby Douche, Zach Bagans, getting in on this and cashing in on this. And I don't have any empathy. I just, you know, he's derision worthy, I think is, and I mean, he may be a fine person in real life, but I think that his path of financially exploiting the supernatural beliefs of others is questionable. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I don't have any problem mocking him. So I'm trying to, like, I know that sometimes listeners are like, man, they seem very dismissive of all this stuff. And, you know, it's like, but when a person goes on TV and is basically a supernatural themed clown, you know, it's really hard for me to take them seriously, bro.
He really comes in at the end of this story, though, because, you know, he makes this documentary, drama, whatever you want to call it. But he really comes in towards the end to I guess, cash in on things.
Exactly. I just wanted to apologize for all my snickering. I basically that it's his presence that makes this silly to me.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's how you watch Ghost Adventures is it's a comedy.
Yeah.
With popcorn.
Mm-hmm. With popcorn. Yeah, it is a comedy. And it's. You have to be ready for that when it comes to him. You can't take him seriously. You know, it's like, you know, Bill Burr goes on a ghost hunt.
Yes.
You know, he's just a comedian, you know.
That's so true. I just wanted to throw that in there now. I know we'll get to it, but the I find myself laughing. I'm like, wait a minute, what if they think I'm laughing at this poor family that's going through all this crap? You know, that's not what I'm laughing at. I'm laughing at the ridiculous nonsense that comes out the far end of this tube. So so let's get back to the heart of it.
There's running vein of that, I think, throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and thanks for bringing that home, Blake. I mean, I think that's very important to highlight. But at the same time, we need to also be looking for signs of convenient fraud. Not necessarily pious fraud. That's a different thing.
There are a lot of agents within this story who benefit if supernatural's real. That's a fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
I still feel like you guys are just jumping to the end, and I think we should talk a bit more about the...
We want to thank you guys for joining us in the show. Yeah.
Check us out on Patreon.
Sorry,
Karen has done so much work on this, and we are just driving all over her work. I'm sorry.
Barreling through to the end. No worries. But I think we should talk a bit more about what makes this case different,
yes,
according to a lot of the discussion around this time. People were saying, well, look, this is different. This is unlike other cases, other claims, because this activity was witnessed by, as I mentioned earlier, people in a position of authority. So police officers, mm-hmm, and medical staff, and people from Child Protection Services. So in particular, there's one fellow by the name of Charles Austin. So he's a police officer from the local police department. And he was very heavily involved in this case and very involved too in Zach Bagans' documentary. And right. So he really became intertwined with this case. And also a family doctor too, and this doctor came in at the early stages and witnessed some of the activity that was taking place. I think things like the levitation and children being thrown across the kids being thrown across the room, and this doctor actually committed these kids to a psychiatric hospital for a short stay, but you just had these differing perspectives on what was taking place. You had this Charles Austin who was convinced that ghosts were in the house and demons were in the house, and it seemed to me like he was really bringing a lot of his own personal beliefs into the case from the get-go, whereas mm-hmm. the doctor was a lot more skeptical and was thinking that something was going on in the household. So Child Protection Services were brought in. Namely, there was a woman by the name of Valerie Washington, and she was the case manager for this particular incident. And she witnessed the little boy climbing backwards against the wall and doing his somersault or whatever it was that he did. And she was so frightened that she refused to continue with the case. So she now says that she appears in Zach's documentary and says that she's now undergoing therapy herself. And it was pretty distressing to see her talk about this, because she was talking about her other work with Child Protection Services and real cases of abuse and violence. And I mean, I guess we should have a content warning here, but cases of children been killed by their parents and family members. And so it was just really upsetting to me to see how she bought into this particular case when it seems to me that there are clear-cut reasons for what's going on, natural explanations. And yet day-to-day she's dealing with these horrific real-life cases of abuse and violence.
Watching that with you was definitely rough. And it made me think, you know, kind of the, one of those the questions of, well, what's the harm? Well, it's right there. Because they, you know, this case took somebody out of her field of expertise, in a sense, that she'll never go mm-hmm. back to. Because, I mean, her job was helping people. And she got so entangled, you know, emotionally and psychologically with this that, you know, she's one less person out there helping people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there were other people. There was a new case manager who was brought in as well. And it seems as though everyone who was involved believed that they'd become cursed by being in the house, merely being in the house, that as a result, they suffered illnesses or accidents or some kind of misfortune. So there were just a lot of people claiming that they'd been affected by these incidents and really bolstering the claims. So I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes that these people really brought their own beliefs into the case.
Well, yeah.
But it just seemed to a lot of people on the outside that this made the case more real.
Well, that we've talked before about haunting as a syndrome, that once you've decided that what you're having going on is a haunting, then every little weird thing becomes part of it. And there's no necessarily root cause, but ultimately, once you say, oh, it's a haunting, then literally every weird coincidence, everything that gets knocked over, everything unusual can be explained away with that big,
it's
a haunting, you know? And so it sounds like everybody on this case had baggage, man. Like they all had their own beliefs and were bringing them in. And so you've got all kinds of stuff and any little thing, mm-hmm. whether it's being perpetrated as a hoax or just misinterpreted, this was a toxic atmosphere for rational, you know, distance investigation.
Oh, absolutely. A real mishmash of different beliefs and claims. But anyway, so they decide with all of these things happening, what are they going to do about it? They need to somehow get rid of these entities in the house. So there were a number of people who were involved, and all of these people are unnamed. So we just hear that churches told them to clean the house with bleach and ammonia. So I don't know what churches would advise that, but there were several unnamed clairvoyants who claimed the place was filled
with evil. The Reverend Procter and Gamble told them what.
Exactly.
Church of the Dirty Sponge.
But one of these clairvoyants said that the place contained 200 demons. So that's where that particular name comes from. But they had some unnamed psychics who cleansed the house, and none of these things worked. Ultimately, they brought a priest into the house, a Catholic priest. And he performed a number of exorcisms. So his name was Father Michael Magino.
Yes, that is correct.
So he was at St. Stephen's or St. Stephen Martyr Parish in Merrillville, Indiana. And so he says that he put a crucifix on LaToya and that she began to convulse. And so this is his quote. I realized that she had an aversion to holy things. You are possessed, I told her. She looked embarrassed and said, I know. So he claimed that LaToya was possessed by Beelzebub, and he performed mm-hmm. several minor and several major exorcisms on her and then declared that she was free of possession. And I thought that that was strange because the whole story is that the kids are the ones who are possessed.
Yeah.
Do we need to kind of discuss just who Beelzebub is?
I think it's worth mentioning.
If you'd like to, you do the honors.
Well, you know, the thing is it depends on who you ask. Beelzebub is either one of those major generals in hell, or he is the devil himself because he is known by many names. And the thing is why would you do a minor exorcism on a major demon?
It does seem a little weird. It's like,
I believe he hadn't been given permission at the time to perform an exorcism at all. and that he didn't need permission to perform a minor exorcism, and that's why he went and proceeded with that, and then had to, because that didn't work, he had to take it up a notch and to get permission to do the major exorcisms.
It's weird to me, though, that like so many people get these celebrity demons. Like, you know,
right. I mean,
if you consider like the number of demons that they're supposed to be, she's got 200 in the kitchen, you know? And I'll be honest, you know, as a skeptic, if you ask me, would you rather have 200 demons in your kitchen or 200 cockroaches? I'm going to say demons.
Yeah.
that is a good point, though. I mean, you know, if you look through the lists of other demons, no one ever seems to be possessed by President Amy.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah. Yeah. No one's got a lot of fear of President Amy. She's the president. Yeah.
They should.
In my horrible demonic library, that'll get my house burned out if my neighbors find out about it. The I've got the False Hierarchy of Demons book, which is one of those famous books with illustrations of demons and little descriptions. It's kind of like a monster manual for demons from when people were pretty seriously believing in them, and I guess they are still believing in them. But you know, there's lots of other demons besides the ones you get straight out of the Bible. I mean, there's all this additional lore. There's, you know, the Apocrypha. There's other, you know, there's Jewish writings. There's Christian writings. There's all kinds of other demons listed. And then you get people like Bob Larson. Bob Larson, he's always pulling demons that are based on generic sin, like the demon of hate and the demon of envy. And it's like, and I mean, between the two, I'd rather go with the cool medieval names, but whatever, you know.
Well, he's non-denominational, so that's why.
Yeah.
But they really do rehash the famous demons,
yeah,
for sure.
Beelzebub, I think, if I remember correctly, some people think that may actually be a sort of bastardization of or corruption of Baal, the god Baal.
Yes,
right.
And I don't even I've spent a lot of time reading about this, and it all kind of blends together. But it seems like Baal itself might also, it's one of those questions of, is Baal a demon, or is Baal like a category of demons? You know what I mean? Or a category of other gods? You know. So
sounds like you're going over a speed bump when you say his name.
Baal. Oh, sorry, that's bad for me. I'm thinking. Yeah, sorry.
Baal. Subscribe to.
Yeah, well, I think that Beelzebub was probably best portrayed by Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters in The Pick of Destiny. So if you haven't seen it, there's another based on a true story we can look into.
Is that Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny?
Yes.
Okay. And that D is for demon. Is that right?
Actually, it's defense, but yeah.
It could be that too.
Yep, defense against the demon.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose. It kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, Box of Oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
Thing done weird things. Cat and Jethro, Box of Oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside The Box of Oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
So we're in a situation now where LaToya has been freed of these demons, and the family moved to Indianapolis in 2012 and lived happily ever thereafter.
Is that true?
No. I think there's still a lot more to unpack with this, because a lot had happened within that time frame, because that's how it seems. The story that we have read or heard about is that this activity starts and they go through all of these different ways of trying to cure this or solve this, and then the family move and that's the end of it. But there was a lot more that was going on behind the scenes during that time. And it really seems like that was a very dysfunctional household.
Yes, it does.
So what we're not told is that during that period where she was undergoing all of these exorcisms, her children were actually in foster care. So they'd been taken away from her. And it seems to me as though she was very motivated to try to do something to give the appearance that she was stable again and back on track, that she could get her children back, which she did achieve. But they had been taken away from her. So she wasn't sending them to school, and she was blaming demons for making them sick and saying that the demons were keeping the kids up all night so that they couldn't sleep and therefore they couldn't go to school the next day. And apparently there had been, and this is quote, a previous DCS history regarding educational neglect. And with psychologists coming in and believing that the kids were performing for their mother, and the family doctor also agreed with that observation, said that the family was suffering from delusions and hallucinations. He was the one who'd ordered for the kids to go to a hospital for a period and to be under psychiatric observation. So there were just lots of things going on in the household at that time.
Can we unpack that a little bit? We talked before a little bit about folie à deux, which is when you have two people in a relationship where one is sort of a dominant and has a delusion and the other one sort of takes on mm-hmm. that delusion as part of the relationship. And
right.
That's specifically about two people. But when you have a matriarch in a family situation who is mm-hmm. supernaturally inclined, believes in the supernatural, it's mm-hmm. really tempting as a child to try to live up to that, to partake in that reality. Mm-hmm. This is not a hypothetical. I mean, I know growing up with a super religious mom, she wanted us to see miracles. She wanted us to see angels. She wanted us to experience the supernatural and to be special,
right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of pressure to put on a kid. Cause when you're a kid, you don't, are we pretending? Is this real? Mm-hmm. Should I be afraid? Should I make yes. something up? Am I rewarded mm-hmm. if I do make something up? There's a lot of family and psychological pressure there. It's just a lot.
Yes, yeah. And LaToya apparently was very religious. She was very superstitious as well. And that a lot of people who were coming through the house saw Bibles and shrines around the house. And a number of psychologists who'd come through had interviewed the children and concluded that the children were acting deceptively and in accordance with their mother's beliefs. That was a quote. And a psychologist named Tracy Wright noted that the youngest son acted possessed whenever he was challenged or asked questions that he didn't want to answer. So they were really role-playing, playing along with the mother. As you say, that's just a really difficult situation to put children into. They don't know how to act, and it's very destabilizing.
It is, and scary, if you just think about all the behavioral problems that were going on, and now you're adding in demonology to it, and then you have these authority figures from the church and from the law enforcement,
police officers
participating yeah. in that narrative. Like, what does that tell mm-hmm. you as a kid? Like, if people are taking it seriously,
adults are taking it seriously. Yeah.
So, it's like, are these kids just acting out? Or are they doing something supernatural? And it feels to me like, well, you know what? I'm going to stop asking that question. Let's keep going. Sorry. I'll let out.
So also the landlord, Charles Reed, he says that Ammons wasn't paying her rent and that she was using the demonic possession as an excuse to not pay her rent, to be behind on paying. And he said that he'd never experienced anything in the house. He hadn't had any previous tenants experience anything, and future tenants didn't experience anything too. So that really reminds me of another case that we're going to have to delve into at some point soon, which is the Humpty Doo poltergeist in Northern Territory in Australia. Yes, going back to the 1990s, and a very similar thing was taking place there, but we'll get more into that when we discuss it.
Big fan.
I don't know, Matt, did you want to talk about some of the phenomena before we talk about Zach and kind of where things currently stand? I know that you've had a lot of thoughts about the kid walking backwards up the walls and the levitation and other activity.
Well, I first kind of want to start off with this whole idea of this is different. This case is different. So someone levitates, like in Enfield Poltergeist or The Exorcist. People are thrown across the room like the Enfield Poltergeist. There's just all these things, things are witnessed by other people like the Enfield Poltergeist. You can tack on Humpty Doo to a whole bunch of these. It's not different.
It's a Dagwood sandwich. The toppings are the same, but they're just all crammed into one sandwich.
Exactly. I'm seeing, Amityville. I'm seeing, things, that we had mentioned before. It's just there's a whole lot of things. Flickering lights. That's a fun one. We were in one place doing an investigation where we found out that if you stepped on a particular floorboard, a light would flicker. That means there's an electrical problem, not a demon.
There's a cold spot.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's always a cold spot near the refrigerator. I don't know. The whole thing, there's just a lot of this. This is not different from anything else. Showing up on the news is not different from any of these other ones. It's the same. But yeah, let's talk about this amazing feat, because one thing with demonic possession is there should have been amazing feats of strength. So we'll talk about going up the wall, because his feats were strong in this. nobody was speaking a language out of the ordinary, except for the demon who went, "Hey." That's out of the ordinary for a demon.
Something for all you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But nobody fell into this thing and started speaking different languages. Nobody came forth with information that wasn't known. There was none of the normal things you
pretty
would see in an exorcism. So why the hell did he get permission to do any exorcism here?
Did he get permission though? Because it seems like he has since.
He did. He did.
Fallen out of favor with the church.
Yes. Recently, the parish of Gary, which somehow just sounds kind of strange, the parish of Gary has put out a statement that this father is not allowed to do exorcisms. So do not come to him for your exorcism, because he is not allowed. And they made it very public that he is not allowed. So that's interesting. What did he do? So yeah, back to the kid going up the wall. Latoya herself, she said that he ran facing the wall up the wall and did a backflip. The report said that the grandmother was holding his hand while he went up the wall backwards and then did a backflip over her, a front flip rather over her. So those are two very different things.
They are.
Both of them
One's a wrestling move. One's a Jimmy Cagney dance move.
Yes. That, and that's you're nailing it there, Blake. Yeah, both of these are absolutely possible.
Yep.
You know,
and I've just seen because, both.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing, all you have to do is hop onto YouTube and look up parkour, and you're going to see these moves all over the place done by kids in their backyard.
Or you know? Look up Peter Parkour and you'll get that. Hey, Spider-Man reference.
Yes, yes. You'll also Spider-Ham. Peter Porker. He's different. Okay, so back on track here. So I also heard that it was the 9-year-old that did it. No, it was the 7-year-old who did it. Could have been the 11-year-old who did it, you know, because official things are saying that it was the 9-year-old, but the mother was saying it was the 7-year-old.
Different versions of the story.
The 7 and the 11s are both prime suspects.
Well, how do you explain the kid's eyes rolling back into his head? Surely you can't explain that.
Except for like half the kids on the playground. Yeah, how could they do that?
Yeah, exactly. When I was, you know, any of these ages, I was either a fan of the rock group Kiss or I was a fan of the movie The Exorcist. So I knew how to roll my eyes back in my head. It was not very hard. And I also knew the reaction my mother had when I did it in front of her.
Yeah.
So she got it a lot. And, you know, I took the two things that she hated the most. And that's when I would go, Mommy. Mummy. She hated that, and she hated when I rolled my eyes back in my head. So I would do them both at the same time, and she want to strangle me. So there's also claims of strangulation in this story.
Yep, choking.
So I'm not finding this surprising at all.
Well, what about the oil dripping from the blinds? I know you wanted to touch upon that.
I want to scream. Okay, so we've got LaToya, who is, you know, she was told, you know, to clean the house with bleach and ammonia and, you know, all this kind of stuff by Father Clean. and, you know, it's just she was getting all this definite disparate advice. But one of the pieces of advice that she got was to make crucifixes of oil. I don't even know if it was olive oil. You know, it should have been, but to put it on the blinds. And I guess because of the fact that that's where they took that one iPhone ghost picture, where it puts
there are lots
in
of those.
You. Yeah.
Yes.
So you know where they took that picture of the ghost in the front window. So she was basically told that, you know, in every place where there's a window or a door, put olive oil. You know, in the shape of a cross. So,
And then that suddenly becomes a claim.
Well, yeah, they come in later and go, there's oil on these things, and then it's not coming from any source. It's not dripping from the ceiling. No, it's not, because she put it on with her finger. Did you look to see if it was dripping from her finger?
I liked your authentic Indiana accent.
That was East Coast New York. No, I turned into like an old, you know, 49er, you know, miner there for a minute. But, It's very frustrating because oil doesn't necessarily, say, evaporate and dry up as quickly as water.
It does not.
So they looked and they saw that there was oil on the blinds, like 2 weeks after, you know, oil had been put on the blinds. So they wiped it off. And we all know how well oil wipes right off.
Mm-hmm.
And they went away for 20 minutes and came back and there was oil on the blinds.
Oh, it was very exaggerated, the claims of how much oil there was, and was references too to the Catholic Church and weeping icons, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it seemed like
are you saying this is all a bunch of viscous lies?
Very thick with lies. But it does seem like there were a lot of ulterior motives taking place.
Yes.
It seems like a lot of people have benefited from this story, including LaToya, the cop, Charles Austin. He's just, if you go and watch Zach's documentary, or if you go and watch any of the news stories, he is so into this story. He's really passionate about it. He really clearly believes. And he said to the Indianapolis Star that he, and this is a quote, said he expected notoriety and figured a movie would come of this. So not terribly professional. And the priest as well signed with a company to turn the tale into a movie. And again, he features very heavily in Zach's documentary. He is just all over this, which accounts for why he's been, I don't know if he's actually been booted out of his job or if he has, they just won't allow him to do exorcisms anymore, but he's making hay while the sun shines.
Yeah. Does he have, I guess he has talking parts in the movie.
Oh, in the documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. So those would be his Maginot lines.
I felt like that was a setup, you know.
Yeah, so, I never see him coming.
If I didn't say Maginot lines never, sometime, I'm sure we would get complaints.
Every time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, paranormal expert Zach Bagans, however you want to pronounce it, of Ghost Adventures. So he ends up buying the house in 2014 for $35,000. So there was a tenant who took over from the Ammons, and they got booted out so that Zach could take possession of the house. And so we will discuss this a lot more in the next
episode of
the Demon House. But his findings, so it's almost a different story. I mean, he does touch upon the early claims, but then he makes a lot of new claims himself.
And like, for example, suddenly there was hair gel on the blinds instead of oil. That's weird.
Yeah. At least Cameron Diaz thought it was hair gel.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So then, spoiler alert, he demolishes the house in 2016. And so my theory on why he demolishes it, he claims that it's to get rid of the evil, but he takes some of the soil from the house and a number of other things and adds that to his museum, because anyone who's anyone in the paranormal nowadays has got their own museum and collects things.
It does seem to be a pretty clever play for how to turn your paranormal hoarding into a revenue stream, you know.
Well, the Warrens did it.
Yeah, yeah.
First, and so lots of other people have followed suit. But I think that the reason he demolished the house is because there were a number of other claimants to the house and to the story. So even though he purchased the house, other people had gotten to LaToya first to purchase the rights to the story.
Ooh.
So I think he was kind of taking his toys and going home by demolishing the place. You can't have it, because Netflix have announced that they'll be making a movie about the events, and they made a $65 million bid for that. So lots of people trying to take possession of the possession, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, nicely said. I do want to say, you know, for those of our audience who have watched any British TV, there's a great show called Father Ted. There's an episode where somebody paid somebody off to get away with something. We'll put it that way. Now,
you said it was about priests.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not right.
the people that were paid off, though, however, had never had money before. So suddenly they're riding around on bicycles with fur coats and, you know, things like that are just ridiculous. And
pimping.
You can kind of see when LaToya has been paid off.
Ah, that's interesting.
Because suddenly she's
a transformation.
Yeah, she's riding a bicycle with a fur coat now. And it's suspicious. It's very suspicious.
That comes into play because Gary, Indiana, was once named the most miserable city in the United States, according to Business Insider, and has previously been named the murder capital of the United States. So, yeah, it's a very impoverished town. They're really trying to improve things and to, I guess, like Detroit, Michigan, other parts of the country where they're trying to gentrify. They're doing their best, but it is an impoverished town, and I think it's really ripe for these kinds of things. Just lots of dysfunction, lots of poverty, lots of people trying to crawl out of these kinds of things. And
it's sad because the only thing I know about Gary, Indiana is the Demon House and the song from the Music Man. And that's, and then I'm out.
And that it's the most miserable city in the United States.
I can add that now to the list. Yes.
Murder Capital. I think, yeah, Time Magazine had named them that. So I do think there are lots of natural explanations for the phenomena that supposedly occurred in this house. And we will go into this a lot more based on a true story to look at this different angle involving Zach and the Demon House documentary slash drama.
It just seems like an incredible concentration of people with strong supernatural beliefs ran into
and
someone who was unapologetically making supernatural claims. And, you know, I would love to investigate an active poltergeist type case or a demon case, but they don't call the doubting people very often. They usually call psychics and religious figures, people who were going to maybe give them a method to fight this stuff, but definitely believe them.
Well, I will say that Matt and I and also Joe Nickel tried to get involved at the time that this was all emerging. And they really did not want to have anything to do with skeptics and the players, except for people who were affected by this, like the landlord.
Right.
But everyone else was really kind of closing ranks.
Yeah. And Joe thought it was an owl.
Signing up.
Sorry, that took me a second. That's funny.
So it was really a tale that was usurped by believers and people who were wanting this to be true. And the story continues into our next...
Based on a true story.
Which I think we've uncovered. Matt and I have already watched the show.
Okay.
And I think we've uncovered something interesting about part of it that just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
And really, I think, busts part of the claim.
Cool.
Open.
Wide. Yeah. Open.
Exclusive.
Yep. Exclusive.
I like that tease. I would like to have a little summary. So what do we think? I mean, obviously I'm very skeptical about all this, but what's your thoughts? What do
about
you think?
About the story in general?
The 200 demons? Well,
200? not even one. No. Zero demons?
Zero demons.
I was thinking no more than three.
I do have a lot of empathy for players in this story, especially the kids.
Yes.
I do feel like they were victims in this, and I do feel that there were other people who were involved, like the caseworker and psychologists and the doctor, who really tried to help and were ousted from this story, and that there are people like the priest and the cop who are believers and who have invested a lot into this and are now profiting from this story, and unfortunately... LaToya herself and her mother, and I worry for the future of the kids.
Yeah. I have totally. To say, I mean, we've seen patterns of this before, and once you've got a movie, a documentary, or more than one documentary about this sort of thing, you will be haunted by this story for the rest of your life because...
Oh, yes, and Netflix is about to make it worse.
I mean, think about the infield, you know, it's like even now, those girls are being, you know, drug out of their, you know, 50-something, you know, lives and pulled back to television. No matter what
Amityville
said, yes, generations affected by that. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and some trying to cash, some trying to some trying to put it behind them. And it's just, you know, it's going to be, they're never going to be rid of this story. They're never going to be rid of this story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Life-changing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I was going to ask Matt, was there anything else that we've forgotten that you want to add?
Well, I just really want to say that when we do the Debased on a True Story with the Demon House mockumentary, you're going to be seeing a lot more research that we've done.
Yeah.
We just feel like there's so much we can't even get into here. And it's going to be great because it's going to be visual. You know, we're going to be able to show where things are out of whack. You know, so I think it's going to be great.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stoltner.
You just heard our podcast coverage of the Demon House case of Gary, Indiana. We'll be taking a look at the documentary by Zach Bagans in an upcoming installment of our YouTube video series, Debased on a True Story. So check that out either at monstertalk.org or at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/monstertalk. You can enjoy extended commercial-free versions of this show by joining us at patreon.com/monstertalk, all one word, M-O-N-S-T-E-R-T-A-L-K. For as little as $2 a month, you can enjoy longer interviews, unbleeped language, and bonus episodes exclusive for patrons. And if $2 a month is not workable for you, but you still want to help out, be sure and leave us a positive review on your podcasting platform of choice. iTunes reviews in particular can help bring in new listeners, and your positive reviews really make a difference. If you want to learn other ways to help out, visit monstertalk.org/support, where you can find even more ways to help keep this show going. Thank you to all of you who are supporting us with your hard-earned money and valuable time. We are humbled and grateful and hope that we always live up to or even exceed your expectations. Monster Talk's theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. Thank you so much for listening.
Been a Monster House presentation.